My beard's getting long again.
Scruffy.
It is scruffy, isn't it?
Is it itchy?
No, no, not at all. But I need to go get it trimmed. I'm going to trim in like 3 weeks. And that's why I look like a hobo.
First you want to kill me. Now you want to kiss me. Blow.
Hey, you've got 3 seconds for it.
I'm going to amp this baby up. See how it sounds.
Come on in, honey. I'm hot, bothered, and horny.
This is the FakeChamp.net podcast. My name's Glenn.
I'm Jarrett.
I'm Sean.
It's good to be back on the mic. It feels like it's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
It has been months. A long time.
Months.
It has been months, particularly for you.
Particularly for me. I've been off gallivanting around the globe. Globetrotting Sean is what they've been calling me. Not really.
Auditioning for a role in The Beach 2, perhaps?
I wish. I think that's a really underrated film.
It's a good film.
No, I was in Thailand for a wedding. Just basically getting drunk for 3 weeks. And in that time, you selfish bastards recorded 2 podcasts.
It took us 2 months. We did 2. Oh, wow.
Couldn't wait to fucking get rid of it.
Well, it's a very sporadic kind of schedule that we keep.
It's true.
We're busy men.
We are. That's a long time.
You can't be that busy. You haven't shaved or nothing. Like, you're just...
No. I've discovered something new.
What's that?
Just using the electric razor every couple of days. That saves so much time.
The electric razor on top of stubble.
Just the electric razors to cover it, cut it down. And then I have to shave it.
You're talking money. Clippers here, not razor.
Yeah, like an electric. Oh, just right. Like, you know, that normally you to do your hair with.
Beard trimmer.
You know, you can usually do your hair, but you use it on your beard.
Yeah, because I just find that then I don't have to shave and I save so much more time. And then I do, like, because it saves
me. Let's do this degenerator real
quick. Well, for people that have never listened before, it is actually a movie-themed podcast.
This is as good as it gets.
How has it been 2 conversations about facial hair?
Well, I can tell you one thing, that this kind of ties in with the what-the-fuck motif that we've got going on for this episode.
So yeah.
We've got our focus film this week is the... I don't know if I will go so far as to call it a classic, but it's...
No, it is. It is very much a classic.
It's the 1987 schlock film Blood Diner, and we'll get to that shortly. A lot to say, I'm sure. A
lot more conversations we had about facial hair.
Yeah, okay. What the fuck it means? I don't know what that means.
Because we just had those 2 conversations about
facial hair.
Where are the 2 of you?
I'm far, far away. So what's been happening? What's news?
What's been going on, Jared?
Just cut to me then. Well, we know that you've been in Thailand.
I've been in
dire need of a good groom.
In dire need of a good groom. Now, when I was away for 3 weeks, I honest to God, I didn't watch a single frame of television or movies. So I am so far
behind.
What
about when you got on the plane? You know, after the whole... immediately go, I've got to watch something now that I can and
I got on the plane.
I'm on my way home anyway.
I got on a plane. For those who don't know, I'm a particularly tall person. Like, I'm 6'9", about 205. So getting on a plane isn't a luxurious thing. Mm. So whenever I get on a plane, the first thing I do is just pop 3 sleeping pills and just hope and pray to God that I sleep for a majority of the distance.
True.
So that's what I did. I just slept the entire way there. And so, I woke up and I was in Thailand.
Did you go to any ping pong shows?
No ping pong shows.
No?
No. I don't know. I wasn't that kind of crowds.
Mm.
I've done the ping pong shows before. It's really not that. It's actually quite... It's scarring. Like, you can't unring that bell. Like, it's horrible stuff. So anyway, as a result, I'm quite far behind in my viewing. But what about you guys?
Having said that, though, you've been pretty trigger happy on the news front lately. You've been posting quite a lot on the website and on the Facebook page. Yeah,
I have, because I feel like I've got to catch up in some regard.
Well, has anything in particular really got you excited or caught your attention?
Well, I don't necessarily know if it's got me excited, but it's got me... maybe a little bit excited, a little bit concerned, a little bit excited. They've just announced that they're rebooting Starship Troopers. Starship Troopers, 1997. So we're talking nearly 20 years ago. And the guys who have written the new Baywatch film with The Rock, they've been commissioned. I know, right? They're the ones that have been commissioned to do it. And
The Rock will be in it.
The Rock will probably be in it. He'll play one of the bugs.
But then, if you didn't know that Paul Verhoeven had directed, say, Showgirls and Starship Troopers, and then you heard this pitch of this awesome sci-fi film, and it's directed by the guy who did Showgirls, you're like, are you sure he's the most
Is he the one competent most guy for the job? I'm a massive fan of the first film. The second and third film.
You're a fan of the other ones too. Yeah,
I like number two, but I deplore number three.
Right. We've had that conversation
before.
I'm a massive fan, and I've never read the source material. But from what I understand, Verhoeven's film is a much different beast to Heinlein's literature. And this new reboot—they're saying reboot. Let's just be frank; it's a remake. This new remake, they think, is going to be much more in tune with the original literature, which hopefully will almost make it a completely separate.
Isn't that what Roughnecks was supposed to be?
Is this the animated thing? Yeah, I never caught it. I watched two episodes. Was it any good?
Not really.
Right.
I've got the fourth film as well, which was all computer animated.
So it was a fourth film?
Yeah.
Was it called Invasion or something? Starship Troopers Invasion? Yeah. It was a CGI,
All CGI. Like Final Fantasy.
Resident Evil.
Was a lot better than number three, which number three ended up on my What the Fuck Was That podcast.
Yeah, it did.
And we had a massive colourful debate over that.
We did.
Yeah, so we don't need to rehash that.
We don't need to rehash
that. No, so my exciting news is that Shaun the Sheep 2 was announced.
It's true.
Yep. Drops the mic, boom. That's enough. That's like the be all and end all for me, because as you know, number one made it into my top 10 last year.
Yeah, you were a massive fan.
I loved it. Did anyone end up catching it?
No, I've
got it there waiting to watch.
Yeah.
Slacker. Still catching
it's
up.
Been nearly 12 months.
Come on, man. I still haven't seen Cinderella yet, dude.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm sitting there as well.
Cinderella's good.
Gotta catch up on
Disney
that.
Disney are pumping them out, live action adaptations of their classics.
Speaking of which, the live action adaptation of Beauty and the Beast, the first pictures have dropped, and fans are going mental because they think the Beast is too ugly.
What? They've never seen Ron Perlman.
The Beast, the fans are saying Beauty and the Beast, the original film, is one of my favourite films of all time. And
don't
Beast,
ruin it, yes, Disney.
Don't ruin it, Disney. And they're calling for
a boycott
or something because they think that the Beast in the live action version that stars Emily Watson, as Beauty.
Emma Watson.
Harry Potter can go fuck itself.
Emma Thompson could probably Emma play Thompson the Beast probably, these days. Yeah. Maybe.
Actually, I watched. That was one film that I did watch, and Emma Thompson was in it playing a
junior.
It was called Barney Thompson, The Legend of Barney Thompson.
Can you say Junior again?
Junior.
Sounds like Indiana Jones.
Junior. Yeah. Robert Carlyle's directorial debut, The Legend of Barney Thompson. And it is absolutely hilarious, and Emma Thompson is the best thing in it.
Wow.
It's like this close to being in my top 10. If you haven't seen it,
all right.
It is so funny. It is so worth
it. Well, Robert Carlyle, the Trainspotting 2 trailer drop.
This is good.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, this is good. exciting stuff. I can't wait. Given the source material, Irvin Welsh and Danny Boyle's back, the cast is back. And then even on top of that, I think the most intriguing cinematographer working just now is, what's his name? Anthony Dodd Mantle.
Yeah.
And he's shooting it. And I think that guy is, I think he's as brave with cinematography as Danny Boyle was in his early career in his choices.
Yeah.
I think this is a marriage made in heaven, particularly after Trance. Those two worked together in Trance.
Yes, and that was terrific.
That was amazing. So I'm really excited to see.
What do you think of the title?
T2 Trainspotting?
Yeah,
it ties in with.
Yeah, but T2?
I know. It's a tough one.
It makes me think of T.
Oh, that too.
The brand, the T2 brand. That's exactly what makes me think
of T2 Judgment Day.
Well, the thing. Yeah. I made a bloody fool of myself a couple of years ago when Addison Heath, our old friend, was talking about how much he loves T2 on Facebook. T2's the best. And I chime in and go, oh, I love their English breakfast. And I had this whole conversation not realizing they were talking about the movie.
About T2. I was going to say that this time around, like, obviously John Hodges back writing the script for this film.
Yes.
And it seems that, again, this is going to deviate quite far from the Yvonne Welsh, you know, the porno novel and that too, because they're introducing characters that weren't in the novels. This point doesn't look like Juicy Terry's in it. But, and I think Danny Boyle pretty much went on the record saying this is the sequel to the film.
This isn't the sequel, this is the literature.
Which is good. I like
it. Which is great. Yeah, exactly. Because it's what's been going on for the last 20 odd
years. Well, it removes that expectation.
Yeah, exactly.
From fans.
From the get-go.
Totally. Yeah.
And anything Danny Boyle does is worth watching. Absolutely. Like anything.
Except for Steve Jobs.
It was definitely worth watching.
Just so you don't have to watch it again.
It's not a I didn't find...
You really didn't like that much.
No, I didn't like it.
I think it was I thought it was a really interesting way to tell a story, to sort of piece it together by doing those three keynote speeches. But there was no story to tell. Well, they did, you know. It was all about, you know, how much of a prick he was. And,
we all knew that.
Awful husband and...
Either way, we digress. Either way,
Do we?
But I still feel like it was an interesting narrative thread. It was a different way of telling a story. I kind of like that. And I think it was a really well put together film, even if I didn't love it. I thought the performance was good, the cinematography was striking, the camera was always moving and circling.
Birdman too.
You know. Birdman was incredible though. Birdman was a really good film though.
Still haven't seen Birdman.
Do you know how many times we've had this conversation?
Yeah, I swear to God. You know I haven't.
It's because
it's been months since I've seen you.
Well, yeah, true. The Revenant's probably, is that still sitting at your number one film with this year?
Oh yeah, for sure.
You're going to go back. You're going to go back to Birdman.
I probably should.
You should.
I probably should.
You up to yourself? Is it somewhere proper you go that's expensive to do it, or just a normal place?
$10,
$15. Oh, that's all right. Yeah, that's good.
You get some big beardy weirdy touching your face for about 20 minutes.
Ah, hello, fellow food lovers. I'm Phil Mignon, world-famous gourmet. In my travels, I've sampled some of the most exquisite foods the world has to offer. That's why they've asked me to tell you all about a charming new eatery located right downtown. As you can see, the atmosphere is lovely. But, of course, the finest attribute of this quaint cafe is the marvelous cuisine. By the way, what is a special ingredient in the Tuesday surprise?
Well, if I told you that, it wouldn't be a surprise anymore, would it?
They're mouth-watering specialties. We'll have you, as they say, licking your lips. Only the freshest natural ingredients are selected.
The first ingredients we need are two stomachs from a couple of tramps.
For use in their carefully guarded recipes.
I'd give my right arm for that secret recipe.
Yes, the chef puts a bit of himself into every succulent dish. And he's always pleased to serve you to your friends. Shouldn't that be serve you and your friends? No. Your gracious hostess will direct you to your table, where you will dine as if there's no tomorrow. So, breeze on down and don't let anything stand in your way. This Epicurean haven is called Blood Diner.
You got that right, homo.
So, this is Phil Mignon, saying bon appetit. Oh, mommy.
The Blood Diner. First they greet you, then they eat you. No one under 17 admitted.
I have no words.
I actually don't know what to say.
What the fuck did we just watch?
What is the...
What's like a throwback, like a late 80s throwback to Herschel Gordon Lewis films. And it felt quite topical at the moment because Herschel passed recently. So, yeah, I just felt like...
Well, the connection with him is this was originally intended to be Blood Feast 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of cool. But, I mean, this is a film that... To be honest with you, I never saw it for the first time until I was probably late teens, maybe 17 or 18. Right. But it's the poster art is something that has struck me since I was a kid. Every time I'd be in a video store, I'd look at the cover and think, this is amazing. The original cover had like the diner sign with a knife above it, but behind that there was like this sort of gnarly, sort of animated figure that was
Very 50s look to him.
Like
as
a greaser.
Yeah.
And he was picking his teeth with a toothpick, and it just looked like, and he had really vicious looking teeth.
Mm.
And it was a really scary cover, and I always thought, I need to watch this movie.
And reinforce that tagline. Yeah. You know, first they greet you, then they eat you.
Exactly. And then I finally watched the film, and I remember being sorely disappointed. Like, I was like, what the fuck was that? Yeah. Wasn't what I was expecting whatsoever. But now, cut to, you know, a decade or so later, and I really enjoyed the hell out of it.
It's a crazy little film. I remember when I saw it on video initially, I too was disappointed because I expected it was going to be something, you know, it was R-rated, it had a great cover art. It came from Vestron at the time, which they'd been pumping out films like Reanimator, really strong R content. And then it was just the humor was kind of lost on me at the time. And I remember revisiting it maybe 4 or 5 years later when I was about 12 or 13, and it just it sat with me so much better because it felt like it was even very Frank Henenlotter, you know, kind of like brain damage or something like that. So sort of ridiculous and campy and fun and over the top and very, very 80s that I developed sort of, like this, you know, unhealthy obsession with and rented it a lot on video, but then it lingered in, unable to get it digitally for quite some time.
It was an obscurity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It wasn't until about probably 2010 it came out in, Lionsgate put it out in like a 6-pack of films, and that was the only way to get it on DVD, and then now they've started this Vestron label
and released a bunch of classics. And that probably would have been what, Panscan?
That transfer, I think it was actually widescreen.
Okay.
It actually didn't look too bad, but it was pretty heavily compressed because they put 3 films on each disc. And now we're seeing it on Blu-ray with a commentary, an hour-long documentary, and this Vestron series that Lionsgate started. It's just fantastic.
Bloody hell. Well,
you know, who would have thought that we would ever see this deluxe edition of Blood Diner on Blu-ray?
It is an insane edition, isn't it?
Mm. It's one of those ones, I'm like you, Glenn, I recognize the poster from when I was a kid bumming around in video stores, and I never got to it, right? That kind of schlocky horror was never really my thing when I was growing up. My thing was always like action films, you know? That was my bag, and then, like you say, it just became lost. It became this lost title that, and you know, in the intervening 10-12 years, I've looked for it and looked for it and looked for it, can't find it, and this was the first time that I've seen it. This is the first my first viewing.
First impression?
Yeah, first impression.
There was a lot of WTF coming out of you, like, what are we watching?
Yeah,
what is going on now?
What the fuck is this? Like, it is it is unlike any film I've ever seen. I can't work out if it is a perfectly calibrated masterpiece that I'm just too thick to get, or is it just this hokey, schlocky, you know, just throw anything at the wall and see what sticks kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of maybe leaning towards the latter.
Well, there's three things came to mind, which I think it's a good blend of all. Like, obviously, 1950s exploitation film. Like, definitely a lot of that in there. But also very strong trauma vibes coming through.
Very trauma.
And then I thought of, like, Forbidden Zone.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the science fiction elements are very much like that film, which, you know, it's just an
almost
absolute...
There's an element of Italian sort of cop film about it too, with the overdubbing and things of that nature as well, particularly the lead cop that's on the case.
Yeah, terrible script and overdubbing. I think.
And then there's a 60s element, obviously, going to Herschel Gordon Lewis, but then there's a flashback sequence in it where they use a bunch of Doris Wishman footage from Another Day, Another Man. Which is odd too, you know. I don't know. Must have licensed that footage.
Does anybody know anything else about this film? Like, I mean, tonight we didn't watch the extra features.
No, it's now on doc. I can't wait to watch it. But no, there's not a lot of info out about the movie though. I believe Sean did dig something up from the IMDb message board.
Yeah, I did.
What's the username on the
username IMDb? Is Hazmat63.
Shout out.
And for the most part, most people are quite praising, you know, when it comes to the, you know, fans, you know, are going to be praising whether you like it or not. Critics weren't quite so polite on the film, but the people who watched it tend to quite like it. But this one, Hazmat 63, 5 out of 10.
What year was this written?
This was written in 2006.
All right.
So at that point in time, this film hadn't been available for a number of years.
Yeah.
Not since home video, not since VHS.
Yeah.
Which adds a bit of legitimacy to what I'm saying.
Why would you come out and tell a story in 2006 about Blood Diner? No one cares.
So this one, I'm not going to read it all. It's about six paragraphs.
I'll just read the beginning. Highlights.
I played a zombie in Blood Diner, and believe me when I tell you, it was such a bizarre and sickening experience that I plan to devote an entire chapter to it in my memoirs. I've worked in a lot of films, and I mean a lot, and I can say with all confidence that the depravity of the project, the inhuman working conditions, and the incompetence of the production has been unequaled and will be fresh in my mind if I die of Alzheimer's disease at the age of 300. And then, like, it just goes on to savage every aspect of the... It's like, they're going, people were walking off the set, they were hiring homeless people and crackheads to fill their ranks. They were getting strippers in to be like some of the actresses. The producer was high on coke and he was cheap and feeding everybody bologna sandwiches for lunch. And then the director, Jackie Kong, had the nickname the Dragon Lady. Now, I don't know how much of it is true, but...
It'll make for an interesting chapter in that memoir.
It will make an interesting juxtaposition on the hour-long making-of on the disc. So,
totally.
But yeah, I mean, like, that's as close to first-hand experiences we've got, other than perhaps Miss Jackie Kong herself.
I was going to mention, I only learned this recently. I saw someone post it up in one of the groups I follow on Facebook. This film actually got a theatrical release here in Australia.
Oh, wow.
Are you kidding?
No, yeah, definitely. Because in Queensland, it definitely went to video. I don't think we would have had a show in cinemas during that Sir Joe Bjelke-Petersen period. But
banned in Queensland?
But no, it was available.
Oh, was available?
It was available. There is some people that say, oh, apparently it was banned in Queensland. It definitely wasn't. It was readily available in all the Queensland video stores.
That's odd. Yeah. Canada banned it in some territories. I don't know that.
Yeah, wow. It's a strange beast.
Which is odd. Yeah, I think...
That same year, though, that this came out, Last Temptation of Christ was banned in Queensland. That was rated M.
Yeah, go figure.
Martin Scorsese's Last Temptation of Christ, but not Blood Diamond.
I think the thing that struck me strangest about Blood Diamond was the...
Blood Diamond or Blood Diner?
Blood Diamond. Blood Diner, sorry. Blood Diner.
Leo's accent, he nailed it.
Was the mash of styles. And I mean that, like, to say... the finale, I won't ruin anything. The finale...
Oh, doesn't matter.
...is set at a gig, and the lead singer of the gig has this hyperbole version of an Elvis quiff, but he's wearing an ancient Egyptian Roman centurion's suit, and then in the background his backing band are all dressed like Hitler playing the trumpet,
which is amazing because there's a wrestling sequence earlier in the film.
Yeah,
well, actually probably like 15 minutes earlier.
There's a lot of
Hitler.
While this band is going on, there's a whole bunch of people who are basically zombies, like, chowing into a stew made of human flesh. Like, what the fuck is going on in this film?
Because they've all been fed those drugs.
I know.
I've never seen a drug like that before.
I've never seen, like... What the hell?
And didn't one of the actors go on to surf Nazis must die?
Yeah, well, according to...
According to that user that was on IMDb, the writer... who later became a good friend of Hazmat's.
Hazmat 63, was it?
He played Mengele in Surf Nazis Must Die.
Wow.
Which is bringing it back to the trauma films. It's still got that trauma feel. It's very
just a lot of Nazi
cheap
stuff
and decadent. And
totally, yeah.
Nazis
it's
and trauma.
It's the Hollywood Nazi underground.
It is an odd film. Where would you place it in your 80s canon of horror comedies? Right at the bottom.
Like, look, it's a tough one. I'd probably say...
Jared seems to like it a lot more than Blood.
It's not Return of the Living Dead. It's not House. It sits sort of with, in my mind...
Rabbit
Grannies and Nukem High. No, I wouldn't even say Troma. I'd probably go something that, like, street trash. That's fun and ridiculous. Yeah. But not necessarily a comedy. It's just absurd and strange.
Yeah, it is a surrealist film.
It is. It's borderline. Like I was saying, I think it's borderline Dadaist. Nothing makes sense.
I would love to watch it as a midnight
screen. Damage, but Brain Damage is, infinitely better.
Yeah.
But infinitely, similar in that.
Yeah. Midnight screening with a big crowd, I think it would be really fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There could be participation.
Absolutely, yeah.
It feels like even when it was released in 87, you kind of get the feeling that even then it just had cultdom written all over it.
Totally.
Like, it was almost like it was tailor-made for that crowd, knowing that this is how far we can push this nonsense, and everybody will love it, and they will love it more the more absurd we make it. That kind of feels what...
It definitely never gets dull.
It just never
keeps moving.
Yeah.
And God knows where it'll go next.
It's certainly not going to be a film that's going to... it's not going to resonate with a lot of people. But I think that those that it does would have a very, very, very soft spot for it.
So yeah, Blood Diner. Not much more to add to that, really.
Yeah, it's not a film that's ripe for dissection, is it? Really?
This is a quintessential cult movie.
It is. I mean, like, it's almost a definition of cult film.
Yes. Shall we move on to Forgotten Gems?
Yeah.
Delicious.
Hey, baby. Right before I stick my big sausage in you, what do they call you?
Forgotten Gems. I think you just did it. Were you recording?
No, you'll have to do it.
You have
Why?
To do it.
Why?
Because
Why?
It's your fucking job.
This is your thing.
This is your right, fucking okay. bag, man.
Forgotten Gems. I try to add a bit of Tom Waits, sort of. Something different. Did you enjoy it?
It's fucking awful.
Well, I think we're ready to go. Glenn, what's your forgotten gem? Tell us what's your forgotten
gem. Are we playing the forgotten gem game?
Yeah, let's definitely play it.
I'm going to play it. Okay, well, my first clue would be the fact that this is right up Sean's alley.
Oh, right.
Is it an action film?
Yes.
Bring it.
Okay, we'll say action crossing over with thriller with a strong dramatic edge.
Right, okay. But so primarily action by the sounds of it.
Yeah. Okay, so 1992. And I'll list the stars backwards, because if I go from the start with the headline, you'll get it.
Okay.
So we've got Linda Florentino. Now, she was in Dogma and Men in Black.
She's also in
and
the Last
Seduction.
Seduction.
Yeah.
Very good boys.
Yes.
So what is it?
Is there any other hints?
She was in that? Because she was in Jade as well, but that didn't rock up until 95.
That's more a thrill.
And that's
even
more
though it's
thriller.
Got a car chase.
That car chase is a cracker.
It is
I think Jade is right underrated, P.S.
Like, it's been a long time.
So I think
that.
Jade is right Same. Underrated. Anyway,
okay.
Sorry.
The next actor appears in a lot of these style of films. That's Michael Madsen.
Oh, I know. I've seen. I know what this is.
The title goes by two names, or the film goes by two titles.
Okay, go. Keep going.
Lead actor is Charlie Sheen.
Oh, I mean, you must be with that one.
Oh, I know what this
you
is.
You do.
Charlie Sheen, Linda, you're in.
Oh.
Okay. Shall I give one of the titles?
Yeah.
No.
It's Fixing the Shadow.
Yes, it is.
No.
Yes, it is.
Duh. What was the other
also
title?
Known as Beyond the Law.
Beyond the Law. Yeah. In Australia,
was it released
Fixing
by
the Shadow.
CBS Fox back in the day?
HBO.
It was an HBO film. Because who directed it? Because this is one of those ones that, you know, remember when you used to be able to go to the video store and get like 7 weekly films for like $10?
Yeah.
Every 6 months, that'd be one of them. I used to watch Fixing the Show.
Well, while I give a bit of a synopsis, you grab your phone, find out who directed it, because I forgot to write that down.
Right.
I don't think I'm that familiar with them. But Charlie Sheen plays an undercover cop who goes and joins a biker gang in order to investigate an arms dealing ring. And as he gets deeper into the investigation, he becomes sort of joined at the hip with the gang, starts to his mental state starts to collapse, and he becomes friendly with them and all that kind of stuff. He becomes erratic, and eventually when he's exposed, all hell breaks loose, and there's this whole sort of conflict within the gang within him, and it's just a really hard-edged, gritty, dusty, like dust bowl kind of film.
Right.
And I think from memory, because I haven't watched it in a long time, it's got that Native American angle to it as well. Like a lot of those films of the time do, like Thunderheart and things like that. So, just a fantastic film. And like I said, I haven't watched it in years, but it really, really has a place. Like, I used to go to it all the time on VHS. Charlie Sheen rocks an awesome mullet, and the cover poster art has him on the motorbike.
Right.
I reckon you'd recognise it.
Oh, you definitely would.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's one of those films that I think it suffered. It's a great film, don't get me wrong, but when it came out in the early 90s, I think it was 92, 93, something like that, it was very much part of the zeitgeist. There was a whole bunch of films that were coming out at that time that were like undercover cops doing the right thing.
Yeah.
The year before that this came out, in 1991, 1992, there was a Jason Patrick film with Jennifer Jason Leigh came out called Rush.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack.
Great film.
Yeah, great film. You know, the soundtrack was by Eric Clapton. And it was the same thing. It was about an undercover cop pushing the boundaries of what it is to be undercover. Even that Jeff Goldblum, Larry Fishburne film, Deep Cover.
Yeah.
Directed by Bill Duke, you know, who is Mac in Predator. And there was a whole slew of those films. The problem with those films is that since then, the last 20 to 25 years, the genre and the boundaries and the envelope has been pushed to such a degree that now when you revisit them, it's pretty dated. And Fixing the Shadow suffers from that quite a lot.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen does pretty good as the nice guy cop, but when he has to sort of rack it up to insane levels, he kind of becomes a little
bit
cartoonish.
This is your obscurity, but he's...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Sorry.
No.
Sorry.
No. Keep on.
What he said.
It's just like, oh, hang on. No, you didn't start this.
No, no. Yeah. He's more than welcome to. Because whenever we do obscurities or any of these forgotten gems or whatever, I never add too much about it. Like, I just like to drop it out there and let you guys have a bit of conversation. Yeah. But no, it's just a movie I think holds up quite well, aside from the mullet.
I agree.
And it's just one of those films, I think it stands out above the rest of those films. Another one that's kind of similar in tone and texture is Dead Bang. You know, because that's got the bikers and it's, you know, very similar in not theme, but just texture. So anyway, yeah, Beyond the Law, but I prefer the Fixing the Shadow title.
And Made of Steel is another title for it, apparently, somewhere.
Really? That looks like a German release. He's
showing
me a picture and
It seems like it's got a lot of titles.
Yeah, it was written and directed by Larry Ferguson. And he's only ever done two things, and the other thing he'd done was called Gunfighter's Moon, that was a direct-to-video western starring Lance Henriksen. But he predominantly made his living as a writer, and he wrote The Presidio, wrote The Hunt for Red October, Beverly Hills Cop 2. Like, he's got a really good...
That's huge.
Yeah, and then Fixing the Shadow was the first film that he wrote and directed, and it's a shame that he never really got off the ground as a director, because he's perfectly capable. It's a perfectly capable film.
Mm.
It's well worth a watch. What's yours?
Mine's a little film from 1988, directed by Frank LaLoggia. In terms of cast, there's like one person. Like, there's people you know from things, but there's one, the lead actor. If I said who it was...
Give it away?
Yeah, to give it away to you, I feel. Maybe not to Sean.
Okay.
I'll
tell you, drop the name, and if you recognize it, keep your trap shut, see if I can get it.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Lucas Hayes.
No idea.
Oh, he's got that look in his eyes.
Yeah, he does. He's going through his mental cabinet trying to find that name.
It's a period set.
Oh, I know who he is.
Set in the early 60s.
Sean?
Nah, no clue.
He's completely...
I'm stumped. No idea.
How old was he? What year?
It was 1988. So it would have been, what, three years after Witness?
Yeah, it's not
Witness. Witness would have been 85 or so. Yeah.
He was the flavour of the month, child actor wise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's hope the producers didn't call him that.
Oh, he didn't work on any of Victor's work, did he?
No.
Well, this is a year before
he's
that.
He's in the new Brad.
Yeah. The reboot of Blood Diner.
Blood Diamond.
All right. So the film is called Lady in White.
I know it, but I haven't seen it.
Is this that...
What? You've never seen... This is a perfect film for you.
Is this like, that real creepy film?
It's really unsettling. It's a bizarre film because it doesn't really... It has this almost Stand By Me, you know, childlike coming-of-age sort of story. And then it's got a supernatural element to it. Then it's got a thriller. It's a bit confusing because I think it tries to do too many things and never nails one of the things perfectly.
Right.
But it has really good intentions and it has a sweet performance by Lucas. And it really sort of encapsulates that early 60s kind of era when... You know, people were naive to things such as child killers or, you know, child sex predators and things of that nature. As I mentioned, like a brief, very brief synopsis is that Lucas is kind of bullied at school, gets locked in the school overnight, witnesses something he shouldn't, and actually ends up seeing a ghost, and the ghost sort of keeps appearing, and he's kind of got to solve the mystery of the ghost. You've seen a million times before that portion of the story.
Mm.
But when the child killer comes into it, it gets pretty dark.
This is up my alley.
Yeah. I'm actually very surprised you haven't seen it. Because if it is the film,
I'm not mistaken that it's been hard to get in Australia.
Well, no, funnily enough, when it first came on video, it was through Virgin Vision back on VHS, but I think Shock put it out on DVD, and it, I think they've still got it, and they might have put it under their cinema cult. They've reissued it under that line. Right. And it's a shame that they've got it, because they've done it no justice. It's probably a fucking pan and scan.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, too, is this got a release through Shout Factory. I think it would have been August or September of this year. And they've released what is basically the definitive version. It's got three cuts of the film. The theatrical, the director's cut, which I'd never seen the director's cut before, and then an extended director's cut. And there's only really 13 minutes difference between the theatrical and the extended director's cut, and then I think the director's cut somewhere in the middle. I watched the extended director's cut because I hadn't seen the director's cut. I figured I was just going to whole hog.
Just jumped in. Just
way too much padding, and you know, it really messes with the motion of the film.
I always go theatrical cut first.
Oh, I've seen the theatrical. I've seen the theatrical before. Yeah. So, but I was like,
saying, if I bought it, I'd go straight to theatrical.
You
have to
go to theatrical. Yeah. The only thing is, I put Danny through, and I kind of wish she'd watched the theatrical version of it. It's a strange little film that came out sort of 1988, and it was pretty big, more so overseas than it was here. But it was a pretty big video when it came out here for some reason. It sort of was a big deal. I don't know why.
I seem to remember seeing it when I lived in Scotland, seeing it.
That's the art.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. The
it's kid pretty hiding. Much always that
the
art.
Kid behind the
which
the
you
mask.
Can't see right now, but yeah
you'll it's have a to kid imagine. Yes.
The mask. Yeah, I saw it when I was a child. It played on TV late one night in Scotland, and I used to watch black and white TV with bunny ears, rabbit ears, and I watched it on that, and it scared the bejesus out of me.
Yeah,
it really terrified me when I was a kid.
It's
so would you say it's in that camp of sort of family-friendly-esque horror films, or it is just a plain straight adult sort of
horror? No, definitely
family. So like Watcher in the Woods and that kind of stuff, would it sort of play in that kind
of... The only thing I feel like, even at its theatrical, you know? it might be too boring for kids.
Right.
It's sort of like maybe tweens to teens.
Yeah.
Anyone younger, I think, would just kind of get.
But definitely suitable. Even if they're bored, it's not inappropriate.
Well, I'd say, it's fine. I watched it when I was 8 when it came out. But then I also watched Blood Diner when I was 7. So.
That's right. We're all fucking sick.
I did read this to Danny. Like, this is the poster art. It says, "The year is 1962. The place is Willow Point Falls. Nobody talks about what happened in the school cloakroom 10 years ago. Now, in the dead of night, Frankie Scarletti is going to find out why." And so I read that to Danny, and then she's like, "Oh yeah, that sounds good." And I said, "Well, do you want me to read the synopsis then? Because sometimes I have to sell the film." And she goes, "That wasn't the synopsis." And I went, "No, it's just a massive tag." But Lady in White, man, look, honestly, cool. Of all people, I think you will dig it, Glenn.
I'm going to add it to my list.
Do it.
Yeah, it's well worth it.
What about you?
What about you, sir?
My film's from 1993. I'll do the same thing. I'll read the cast backwards because you probably get it. Lara Flynn Boyle.
It's recent.
No. Good. Firewalk with me.
Not Firewalk with me, no. Then Dennis Hopper.
She wasn't in that anyway.
No, she wasn't. It was, what's her face?
Moira.
Tierney?
No.
But I met her in New York.
Oh, nice.
She's lovely. She's tiny. It's got nothing to do with anything. Lara Flynn Boyle, Dennis Hopper.
Mm. Oh, this is not Super Mario Brothers.
No.
She wasn't in that either.
No, but there was a girl with red hair in it.
Yeah, so. Glenn's on fire.
And then the number one is Nicolas Cage.
It's not Wayne's World.
Oh,
But he's not in that.
Oh.
Directed by John Dahl.
Red Rock West. We only just spoke about Last Seduction before.
Yeah, we literally, as soon as we mentioned that, I was just like,
because the first thing was Red Rock West came to my head, and it can't be because we were just talking about Last Seduction.
Don't
sound like an idiot.
Don't sound like a moron.
I was like, I'm going to put it out there. All right.
Just complete coincidence. Red Rock West, you ever seen this?
Yes, I have.
Such a good thriller.
And it's one of those ones, right, where Nicolas Cage is mentioned, when Nicolas Cage is mentioned in Favour, everybody mentions the same thing, leaving Las Vegas, and even when it gets to his mid-90s to late-90s action spate with Connie and all that. And Red Rock West is always left out of the bunch, and it just doesn't deserve to be, because it is such a solid film. The briefest of synopsis is he plays an ex-Marine who's now wounded, who goes into the town of Red Rock and gets mistaken for a hitman, and then gets roped up in this noirish scenario where everybody's double-crossing everybody else and murdering hitmen. Dennis Hopper comes into town. He's a real hitman. J.T. Walsh, God rest him, both him and Dennis Hopper. J.T. Walsh is the cop who's... It becomes this tangled web of insanity. It was originally, it was shown at fest in the festival circuits, and nobody picked it up. It was deemed straight for cable. It wasn't even straight to video. It was straight to cable until one independent cinema in middle America picked up a copy and then just started showing it, and then it went gangbusters and it just went through the roof. But what it did was, the most impressive thing, I think, was John Dahl and his brother Rick wrote it, and it kind of launched this serious new wave of neo-noir in the 90s. The Last Seduction, John Dahl, we just mentioned that, that came mixed, and then on the back of all these films came things like U-Turn and
The End of Violence. There was tons of them that were all coming up.
And John Dahl, for my money, was making the best ones. Red Rock West and The Last Seduction. But it's a cracking little thriller. And if you haven't seen it, it is so worthwhile.
It's so long. It was a real staple performer in the video rental market. It was one of those ones that you had to replace quite often because it got worn down.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. And like, it was a favourite.
It's one of my favourites. It's one of those ones that I regularly pull out. Like, if my girlfriend's not at home, you know, then I'll sit down and watch Red Rock West and The Last Seduction as a double bill, because they're perfect little films.
If anything, like, that I get out of these is that I add these things to my list and I rewatch these movies that you boys bring to the table.
So. Yeah, that's always the best thing about this little segment.
I'll have to make notes, and that one's going on the list, boys.
They call me Sheetar.
So before we run, like, Monster Fest is coming up.
It is, yes. November 24th to the 27th.
So excited.
You've got to come along and see the Greasy Strangler. It is a great festival highlight.
That is one of the ones that is on number one on my list.
Monster Fest is, of course, Australia's premier horror festival. You know, I've spoken to so many people and mentioned it, and they're like, "Oh, I didn't know we had a horror festival."
Well, it's a genre festival.
Yes,
genre. We'll open it up because there's westerns.
Yes,
actually, Ben Hall.
Well,
Legend of Ben Hall's playing.
The diversity this year is much greater than previous, which is a good thing. It's sort of opening up, and lots more people. It's tangible, you know, for a lot of other people.
There's a documentary on Smokey and the Bandit that's going to be playing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that looks amazing.
That's Ben Howard's highlight.
Are they going to talk about the four made-for-television Bandit movies?
Probably. Well, there's actually a made-for-TV panel at the festival as well, and there's a screening that's following it of Bad Ronald.
Oh, wow.
So it's pretty, some pretty cool stuff. There's, like, a lot of different panels happening. We've got Ted Kotcheff out, and he's presenting a couple screenings and doing a masterclass. There's a lot of stuff happening, but I'm going to mention, too, is that they're taking Monster Fest to Hobart for a mini fest.
I was about to mention that.
It's really cool.
This hopefully is the start of like a bit of a tour thing.
Well, there's rumours about that next year we might see some other popping up in other states, mini fests, and then keeping the Melbourne one as the main festival.
The central hub of it all.
But there's some seriously cool films. I can't wait to see half of them, and I'm worried I'm not going to get to see them all. So, I'll be working and trying to watch.
If you're listening and you're in Melbourne, try to get your hands on a copy of the program. It's fucking impressive.
It's a really good program. Like, it's a really nice layout.
Really, really cool.
Do you want to know the thing that I'm looking forward to the most?
The Saturday morning all-you-can-eat cartoon breakfast marathon.
How did you know?
Oh, really?
I am not
even joking. I saw the page there, but
Count Duckula. I grew up watching Count Duckula. My brother used to have, like, a little soft toy for him. And all-you-can-eat cereal for 2 hours? Bring it.
This is wonderful too, because last year they did stuff like E.T.
That's right.
And had this little component that's sort of kid-friendly, which for years, I think, just in conversation, I said to you, they need to do like a Little Monsters or a Mini Monsters kind of component. That's great to see in the program.
And Paul Schrader's new film, Doggy Dog. Really like Nicolas Cage, really looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And our old friend Addison.
Mondo Yakuza, world premiere ahead of its US screening, I think, in early December or so.
I believe so,
It's managed to pick up a few festivals already.
Well, so. Addison, as we all remember, got the Fake Champ Awards from two of the three of us from last year. So I'm very interested to see Mondo Yakuza. I'm excited for this
one. Not to mention, he has made a film in between.
I know. This guy is like a movie-making machine.
I need to see that Perfect Nonsense.
The Perfect Nonsense,
There's talk... I probably shouldn't say that. It's nothing to do with the monster side of things. But there's another underground film festival that might be happening somewhere else in Australia. And that film might play it.
That's interesting. We're a movie podcast. Can we not talk about that?
Oh, no, we can, but I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say anything. I'm pretty sure I can. Look, And
I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
Err on the side of caution or fuck it. Fuck it.
Zook Dale of Trash-O-Rama fame is putting together an Adelaide Underground Film
Festival. That's not secret. He's made that public.
He's made that public, but he hasn't said what film's playing yet, has he?
Well, maybe it's one of these ones.
Well, there's a good chance it could be The Perfect Nonsense. He was talking about Mondo Yakuza, but it's like, well, you know, that'll be coming out on DVD and it's actually coming out on DVD in January, so it'll play MonsterFest and come out in January on home end.
Just in time for my birthday on February, boys. Just sowing the seeds.
Right. So beautiful. Look, if that doesn't happen, well, we're still giving a bit of a plug to a festival that might, you know.
Well, that's it. You'll be able to catch Gone Lesbo, Gone on Top
There's always a fucking reason.
There's a good chance that that'll be playing. If the festival goes ahead, Dick says that he wants to play the film, and I'm like, well, nobody else does.
So. He obviously does.
Please do.
He has no respect for his own festival.
He's like, I'm going to taint it with this piece of shit. This 2 year old trash.
Bring any riff rat piece of shit off the
Jared,
signing autographs.
Yeah. honestly, if it wasn't for the fact we were so heavily affiliated with MAF, I would have totally, honestly, voted your film best of the festival.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, that's awesome. Honestly, I really, if you haven't seen Gone Lesbo Gone, try and get your hands on it. Yeah, really,
I don't know what I'm going to do with it now. Get someone to release it. Because it doesn't look like it's coming in on DVD in a hurry. You know, we put all the work in to get the DVD, and it was going to happen like in April, May this year.
Yeah, I remember.
But that hasn't eventuated.
What about, does Stumpy have anything new in the pipeline that he might be able to add it onto a DVD release as a supplementary feature?
Well, it's tough because he put the Doco on there, but you kind of want Lesbo Gogo as well.
Yeah, of course.
So I don't know. I mean, there's some deleted scenes. There's all sorts of shit. Well, yeah, it was going to be a great addition. So I don't know what will happen with
that. Watch this space.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a small release in the Philippines in one of those little market stalls. You know, where it's like, you know,
65 people. Yeah, 65 people watching it on an old tube TV eating street food.
I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, look out for Jarrett's crowdsourcing. Coming soon. To a Twitter sphere near you. All right. So anyway, thank you for listening. Thanks, boys. It's been awesome to get back on the mic.
Oh,
it's
been so great.
Yeah. Yeah. So hit us up on Facebook. We're obviously on all the other platforms, Twitter, YouTube. So until next time, we'll see you later.
Bye.
Au revoir. For a Scotsman, I have got an appalling Sean Connery impression.
What's your Sean Connery accent like?
What's your song, yeah? I went into my study the other day and a book fell down and hit me in the head, but I can only blame myself.
You see, there was a gap in there between the finish of the joke and him processing it.
I'm like, I'm just deciphering that accent. Okay, I've got one.
Okay.
You're the man now, dog. From Finding Forrester.
Wow, there's a random...
You're the man now, dog.
You're the man
now. I'll take the rapist for 300.
Take the rapist for 300. This is...
Do you have him in your sights?
This is spiraled out of control.